IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hi, I'm Sarthak, and I welcome you to All Things Policy. Today is April 7th. April 7th is observed as the World Health Day. In this episode, we'll talk about India and India's public health system. And for this episode, I have with me Mr. Apoorv, who is a senior program manager at the Takshashila Institution. He manages Takshashila's flagship PGP in public policy, and he holds a master's degree in public health. Hi Apoorv, welcome once again to All Things Policy.
Thanks, Sarthak, for having me again.
Yes. So this year's theme for the World Health Day is building a fairer and healthier world. This theme is so relevant in the present context, given the fact that the health systems vary so much world over. As the health systems vary, capacity to deliver varies, access to quality healthcare differs. This leads to unnecessary sufferings, avoidable illnesses, and premature deaths. All this creates an unequal world, maybe a not-so-fair world. Apoorv, you have been studying public health for a while now. What do you think are some of the parameters which leads to these kind of inequalities?
Right, Sarthak. But before I get into the topic, because you mentioned about the theme of World Health Day, which is building a fairer and healthier world, it actually reminds me of my dissertation when I was doing my master's degree. And it was on social determinants of health, which is a concept and idea that says that an individual's health is dependent on his or her other social, cultural, and economic factors. And what I did way back in 2015 was I connected this aspect with Rawlsian idea of justice. So as you were mentioning, I was able to sort of recall my dissertation thesis. But coming back to your point on some of the major challenges that India's healthcare sector right now is facing, I would divide them into two very broad categories, and it will be infrastructure and manpower. And during the pandemic, all these factors were tested. Both these factors were tested, and both these factors, all of us realized, and all of us were actually worried that this is going to be our Achilles heel, because infrastructure and manpower in India's healthcare have been perennially poor and abysmally quite sort of inadequate. Let me start with infrastructure, and I won't go into too much of details and too much of statistics. I will just sort of, you know, pinpoint one piece of statistic. In April last year, during the peak of the pandemic, the Princeton University and the Center for Disease Dynamics, Economics and Policy estimated that India has 19 lakh hospital beds, 95,000 ICU beds, and 48,000 ventilators. Now, these three indicators are very important to, and they are sort of very critical in our fight against COVID-19. But the report suggested that most of this infrastructure is concentrated in the private sector. So what essentially India's healthcare sector does is it excludes a big proportion, a big chunk of the population out of the access and coverage of these infrastructure facilities, because most of them can't access private healthcare sector. So that's the first aspect in which, and this acts as an input level barrier, I would say, that probably aggravate into other kind of, health inequities and differences in health outcomes and indicators. Yeah, so most of this infrastructure, unfortunately, Sarthak, is concentrated in private sector. And most of these hospital beds, around 65 to 75% of these hospital beds, are concentrated in five states. These five states are Uttar Pradesh, Karnataka, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, and West Bengal. So major chunk of the states do not even have adequate number of hospital beds.
And about one more thing here. So when you talk about some states which are having large number of hospital beds, but see, in these are also some of the states which have a large population, right? A state like Uttar Pradesh will have huge population. So only looking at the total number of beds might not give us the correct picture, because again, the number of people are also more, so the healthcare requirements will also be more. So some studies also point out towards per beds per unit population kind of data. And here also we find out that India is lagging behind. So in case of India, right now, for every 1,000 people, we have 0.7 beds. And the global average is around 3.4 beds. And we are not even targeting the global average. Different health policies that we have had, for example, the national health policy, it is not saying that we need to be equal to the global average. The high-level expert group recommendation, they also did not mention that we should be having 3.4 beds. We are targeting some 2 beds for 1,000 population. So right now it is 0.7, target is 2, global average is much more than that. And when we are talking about the infrastructure that we have, right, the number of hospitals and all. So the rural health statistics of 2018, it points out that there is a massive shortage of health sectors which provide primary health care. For example, it points out that in case of India, we are having a shortage of around 32,900 sub-centers. We have a shortage of around 6,500 primary health centers. We have a shortage of around 2,200 community health centers. So the number of hospitals is less. And again, the number of beds that we have is also very low. And it is, again, as you mentioned, concentrated only in some few states.
So you have rightly pointed out, Sarthak, that the rural India is actually lagging behind when it comes to infrastructure. And rural health statistics is a very good indicator. It's a very good report document by the ministry that helps us understand about the status of rural health. And most of these sub-centers are sub-centers and primary health centers and community health centers are as per the population. So they are there as per the population norms. And in several larger states where the population in a particular area is large, the number of sub-centers and primary health centers are inadequate. And that is what is reflected in rural health statistics. The second parameter that I would come to is, apart from infrastructure, is the manpower. And mind you, infrastructure and manpower are the key indicators or the factors that determine the health capacity of India's public healthcare system. And according to the WHO, the recommended doctor population ratio is 1:1,000. But in India, except the 4 southern states, all other states have more population per doctor. So for example, Assam has 1 doctor for 1,500 people. Bihar has 1 doctor for around 3,000 people. Jharkhand has 1 doctor for around 6,500 people. Uttar Pradesh similarly has 1 doctor for around 3,000 people. So human resource wise also, manpower wise also, we are overstretched. And in rural health statistics, Sarthak, if there is one data point that I look for is the absence or the inadequacy of the specialist in community health centers. And year after year, the report has pointed out that all the community health centers where the specialist, which means pediatrician and obgyn, should be there, 82% of those posts are vacant, which means 8 out of 10 posts are actually vacant in those community health centers. And it's a perennial problem year after year across India, and we have not been able to solve that problem.
And see, Apoor, this the rural statistics profile, so they mention these trends that we do not have sufficient number of specialists in primary health centers. But what they point out that the number of doctors in India has increased. It has increased a bit by around 24% between 2014-2018. So despite the increase of 24%, still we are having a massive shortage. So the road that is there in front of us is again, the road that has to be covered is quite long.
It's quite long, Sarthak. And although the number of doctors that India is producing has actually increased, but most of these doctors are practicing in private sector. And also, more importantly, there is a huge interstate sort of, you know, differences in the number of doctors produced by the state. So some of the southern states where you have more medical colleges, they produce more doctors as compared to some of the states in northern India where the demand for doctors are more and there are actually no doctors.
And when it comes to healthcare, it's doctors do play an important role, but apart from doctors also, you need other health professionals, right? You need nurses, you need lab technicians, you need paramedics. So that number is also not good. I mean, we are below average. So there was a study which pointed out that in case of India, we have around 19 health workers for every 10,000 population. And the WHO standards is around 23 health workers for every 10,000 population. So whenever we think of human resources and health, we should be also thinking about not just the doctors, but also about nurses and community health workers and other professionals who also, at the end of the day, deliver different kind of healthcare interventions.
That's right, Sarthak. I think it's not only the doctors, but also the paramedics and other staff within a healthcare facility that plays a very important role. So, as you were just mentioning this particular fact, a few years ago, I read a research paper which was published in the PLOS that said that, you would know that in India, it's only Tamil Nadu that has a cadre of public health managers. I mean, they are called differently in different states, but broadly, these are supervisors that are present in sort of primary health care centers, primary health centers and some other government facilities. And their work is only to supervise the operations. And it is this cadre that makes a difference in Tamil Nadu's healthcare system. And this particular research paper that I was reading, it says that to fill the gap of these health managers across India, it will take India another 30 to 40 years to actually recruit these people across India. And by that time, I don't know what would happen, right? So it's quite a bizarre situation that we are in, and mind you, I think we should be thinking about all this a lot more seriously, Sarthak, given the pandemic that we are into, and I think we have sort of missed the bus.
Yeah, I mean, see, exactly. I mean, your point, you raised an important question here. And see, when you were saying that we will need these many years to fill in these gaps, so this points out that healthcare is something which is very, very important. And it is a paradox that healthcare is something which is kind of the need of the hour, but it seems that there is not much demand for healthcare, in the sense that if you look at all these elections that we have, I mean, the elections for the parliament, the election for the state legislative assemblies, if you observe the speeches, you will not find that there is much discussions around health or healthcare interventions. If you look at all these panel discussions that we see on primetime TV, there also it is not much there. And I was reading a paper on the pattern of health promises for Indian democracy. They point out that what they have done is they have studied the election manifestos of different political parties, national political parties, and they say that for most of the national political parties, in the manifestos, there will be a certain section for health and they will be talking about different interventions they plan to bring. And generally, it is inclusive, generally, it is progressive in nature. But when it comes to the election speeches, when it comes to all these discussions that we have around the different kind of debates, you don't see healthcare as such. So I'm assuming that there is not much demand for healthcare, at least. So what do you think about it?
That's right, Sarthak. I think this is a paradox that I've been thinking about for quite some time. And I've been reading a lot on the political demand of good services by the citizens. And there's not much literature with respect to India, but there's a lot of literature with respect to other countries, especially Latin American countries. But before that, I would, because you have mentioned that, the election manifestos may have issues like public health care relegated into one or two pages, but you won't see this in election rallies or any of those grand narratives that are prime time debates build every evening. So in 2018, the ATR conducted an All India Survey on governance issues and voting behavior. And their report was quite an eye-opening and quite revealing, because they said that better hospitals and primary healthcare centers was the second most pressing governance issues by the citizens, by the voters who were part of their sample size. But most of these people scored their sort of representatives as below average when it comes to performance, which means that there's a huge gap between their expectation and what they actually get from their representatives. But year after year, I don't think so that an incumbent government have been kicked out in India because of a poor healthcare infrastructure. And that's a paradox that that's something that has troubled me. And I think in 2004, two World Bank economists, Stuti Khemani and Philip Kiefer, wrote this wonderful paper. It's called "Why Do the Poor Receive Poor Services?" And they argue that, and especially in India, and they argue that broadly there are three reasons that explain inadequate and poor quality public services in India. Number one, focus on narrowly targeted goods to interest groups like club goods. And this is what we have mentioned, we have talked about in our last podcast on welfare architecture, Sarthak, that the government is now focusing on very narrow goods rather than broad public goods like public health, right? So that's the factor number one, what the authors argue is one of the factors for poor services. Second is lack of credibility and political promises to provide public goods. So government after government, if you see the policy solutions that they offer, they don't vary. There's not much difference between the policy solutions. So the message that goes to the voters is that maybe healthcare or public health is not even a priority for this government and for the next government and for the next government. Right. And the third, of course, is social fragmentation, because as you all know, that Indian politics is patronage-based politics, and a lot of these issues are identity-based issues. So there's a lot of social fragmentation. And that's why the overall demand for a good public health services is not there in India. Right. It has sort of this experience has kind of varied, because in some southern states, there's some difference in this pattern.
So when you're saying that there is a lack of credibility of public promises to provide public goods, that means the voters, they will not trust them in case the politicians, they say that, okay, we are going to provide for these public goods. Rather, they would want some direct benefit transfer, or they would directly want some goods, some private goods they would want.
That's right, Sarthak. It's something that's quite tangible, that's quite measurable, is what the politician, there's an incentive for politicians to provide these goods. Also, some of these goods, mind you, have a visibility aspect also. So a toilet is more visible than probably an immunization, right?
Yeah.
So that is why you won't see demand of these intangible behind the state services rather than these visible, tangible services.
Exactly. I mean, if someone goes and promises that I will reduce tuberculosis prevalence in this area by this much percentage over these many years, people might not even know whether this is happening or not. They will never be able to, unless they keep on reading the reports where the prevalence of tuberculosis is mentioned year-wise, or they might not have a very good idea about it. Yeah, so in those kind of scenarios, they would prefer to politicians, it is there is an incentive for them to talk about or promise those goods which are directly delivered to the people.
Right.
So, in the last 1 year, we have seen massive restructuring in the economy. We have also seen how our healthcare systems were stressed, and also how we dealt with the pandemic. And also, since a huge number of people got impacted by it, in fact, the entire country is getting impacted by it, the economy is getting impacted by it. India had one of those, India was one of those countries which had the highest number of infections. So, when it comes to healthcare, people's perception might have changed. The demand for healthcare, whatever was there in the past, and what the demand for healthcare right now might be slightly different. Do you think this is going to change our healthcare systems? Do you see the overtone window, so as to say, shifting?
Ideally, the overtone window should have opened sort of, you know, the gap between the two window panes should have been larger in the past 12 months, Sarthak. But unfortunately, I don't have a good news the first sort of indicator was the budget, right? And what we've seen and we have also discussed was that not much has been given to Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, right? It's only a 10% increase in the overall spending that has increased. So I think that has sort of shown the priority of the government. Probably, I mean, of course, they are stretched. They are fiscally stretched and there are other factors as well. But the bad news is that I'm not very optimistic that in next few years or in next few election cycles, we will see a demand of good public health services in India. And for various reasons, Sarthak. First, as I've mentioned, that the demand, there's a low demand for public health. And public health measures lead to negative results like the decline in child health from waterborne diseases, which we all know. Imagine a politician talking about a disease surveillance system set up by the government and that can control an outbreak or an epidemic. I don't think that's going to happen, right? So it's a long haul. It's a long haul, and probably in next 5 to 10 years we will see a shift, but it's not going to happen overnight.
So Apoorv, what you are saying is right now the way incentives are aligned, so it prevents changes in the health systems.
That's right. It not only prevents, it doesn't even trigger those changes, Sarthak, right? In the first place. You won't see a massive street protest in let's say, Bangalore or Delhi or Jaipur by people demanding for good hospitals. I have not heard about it. And that's something that's actually not a good sign of a citizenship. It should happen because we should demand for good services. But has not happened. And when we see if you see historically, some of the states, and I will come to that point later on, some of these states have been able to do that by using the same kind of the citizen-based sort of pressure-building mechanisms that have resulted in good public health services in India. One more sort of precedent that I would like to add to your point is what Monica Dasgupta has mentioned in her seminal research paper. So she talks about the sanitation movements across Europe that actually led to proper healthcare and sanitation facilities in those countries. So I think India needs its own kind of sanitation movement right now of 21st century.
So you are talking about an example from Europe. Back home, do we have any such scenarios? Some of the states in India, they perform exceptionally well when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to public health as well. So do we have any precedent where citizens themselves actually played a very important role, which led to these states performing exceptionally well along these lines?
Yes, Sarthak. We have an example, and the example is Tamil Nadu. But in Tamil Nadu, what has happened is, and it didn't happen in 1 or 2 decades. It actually took several decades for this change to happen. And the major factors that played a role were the anti-caste movements of the early 20th century, caste mobilization, building of solidarity amongst different castes and among different sections of society. So what it did was that it brought all these people across caste groups, across class groups, into a broader sort of umbrella, which some of the political scientists have sort of argued is that they have brought these different communities under a broad umbrella of Tamil identity. And it was this particular identity that led them demand services from the public officials and public servants. And in his book Delivering Public Services Effectively, Tamil Nadu and Beyond, I think Stanford professor Vivek Srinivasan has actually mentioned how this change happened in the over the past 100 odd years. So it was the citizens who started demanding services, and in a very aggressive manner, mind you, Sarthak, in a very aggressive manner, of course, democratically and constitutionally, they started demanding good services from the public officials. And it was this particular phenomenon that led to proper services and proper sort of broad-based funding and broad-based improvement in services when it comes to healthcare, nutrition, employment, so on and so forth. So Tamil Nadu is a template that I think can be followed.
So citizens as well as social capital, they are also equally relevant when it comes to the right kind of access to healthcare facilities.
That's right, Sarthak. That's right. So citizens as well as social capital, because without social capital, without building those solidarities, without having those communities coming together, I think this particular, and I've read about this thing, and so for me, it's like quite magical and something that I have sort of, I've been thinking was that can this happen in other states like Uttar Pradesh or let's say Bihar, Chhattisgarh or Jharkhand, that's more fragmented than, let's say, Tamil Nadu.
Yeah, so Apu, this is an interesting point and you have given a lot of thoughts to ponder about. And with this, we will also conclude this episode of All Things Policy. Thanks, Apurv. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. Stay tuned for other episodes of All Things Policy. Thanks again.
The Takshashila Institution is an independent, non-partisan think tank and a school of public policy. We have education programs lasting one semester and 1 year that are tailored specifically for people like you. They are all online and you can take them from anywhere. Admissions are now open for our 12-week graduate certificate program in public policy, defense and foreign affairs, technology policy, and health and life sciences. Visit takshashila.org.in/courses to find out more.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week, Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank, and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.